Hello, fellow Rebel Capitalists. Hope you're well. Wanted to go over a story from Europe where if you are producing oil, well, if you're producing oil right now, this is good news. But if you're thinking about producing oil in the future, this is very, very bad news. And I think let's just do this. We go to the Wall Street Journal really quickly, and we see that commodity prices have been going up. They've been skyrocketing, as most of you know. Some commodities, not all. And sorry about that. The bird just hit a window there. Unfortunately, he's okay. Commodity prices have been going up, and we believe that's because of the demand side. At least that's the narrative. But I think it may be more so due to the supply side. More on that in just a moment. Let's go over to CNBC, and we see this story. A landmark ruling in Europe's top rights court delivers a watershed moment for climate litigation. Here we go. Key talking points. The European Court of Human Rights decision was hailed by campaigners as a groundbreaking moment. The influence of the decision expected to be felt far beyond Europe's borders. The ECHR ruled on Tuesday that two other similar climate cases were inadmissible. However, okay, but I'm sure they'll figure out a way around that as far as these climate crazies. And I'll tell you why I think they're crazy here in a moment. So first, what was this group? And by the way, this ruling is unappealable. So you cannot appeal it. It's set in stone. It's done. Europe's top human rights court on Tuesday ruled in favor of more than 2,000 elderly Swiss women who argued that their government's effort to tackle the climate crisis were insufficient to protect them from frequent and intense heat waves. Now, elderly Swiss, so they live in Switzerland. How many heat waves have they had recently in Switzerland? And let's define heat wave. And where I'm going with this is every one of their complaints are totally subjective. So for them, a heat wave could be that it got up to 85 degrees. For an elderly Swiss woman, that would be unbearable. But also, let's look at this. Their government's effort to tackle climate crisis. How do you quantify that? Like, what? How would we measure if their government's efforts were actually acceptable or they were sufficient? There's no way of measuring that other than do these 2,000 elderly Swiss women feel good. That's what we're basing the law on right now. It's, do you feel good about what your government is doing? If you don't feel good about it, then let's demand they do more and make it, let's legally demand they do more. And then at what point will they feel better about the situation? Well, I don't know. It depends what side of the bed they wake up on. And it's just 2,000 elderly. So let's look at this picture. Look at these gals right here. So what they want to push for is governments making, you know, gas and diesel cars illegal. Well, that's one of the things that they would want to push for. Well, you guys know just as well as I do that electric cars right now are far more expensive than getting some diesel car or some gas-powered car that you would get in Colombia or even in Europe. So how will this impact these gals? Do you think any of these women right here would have a hard time spending an extra $5,000 buying an electric car? Of course not. Of course not. But you see, they don't care about that. It's all about whether or not they can sleep better at night. It's about the feels. It's not about the reals. Because what happens is these laws are going to, of course, disproportionately impact the poor and middle class that cannot afford that electric car, that can't afford to do the things that these 2,000 Swiss women can easily afford. But they don't care about the poor and middle class. They only care about one thing, and that's how they feel. Because if they cared about the poor and middle class, obviously, they would think these things through to the degree to which they would come to a completely different conclusion, right? I'm not saying that climate change or what, you can have your own opinion on that. But I'm saying there are no solutions, there are only trade-offs. So what are the trade-offs? And when you go through the trade-offs of the laws that these gals are implementing with success, the trade-off is the benefit is these gals can sleep well at night, and then they can look. And again, let's be honest here. It's not like these gals will feel better about themselves just because this law passes, because in 6 months' time, they'll find something else to be negative about. This has nothing to do with climate change. This has to do mostly with the inadequacy they feel in life. And later on in life, they want to continue to be the center of attention, because as women growing up, they've been the center of attention their whole lives. They get to the point where they've, let's say, hit the wall, if you want to use Rollo terms. And now all of a sudden, they've got to say, hey, I want that attention back. I want that attention back. So let's just divert my energy to gaining that attention through climate activism. And once I feel good about that, then I'm going to move on to something else. I mean, that's really at the heart of what's going on here. And who pays the price? The poor and middle class. The people that they just obviously don't care about at all. But more importantly, I guess, what does that do to the price of oil? This is what we need to think about. And when we looked at those charts of the Wall Street Journal, it's easy to think that demand is increasing, but there's also the supply side of the equation, which when I'm saying $1,000 a barrel oil, believe it or not, I'm not being hyperbolic there. Now, is that going to happen tomorrow? Of course not. Absolutely. Absolutely not. But is that going to happen over the next 10 years? When you look at the supply side and you look at what just happened with these 2,000 elderly Swiss women, I think there's a probability way above zero that we definitely need to consider. So moving on down the article, the European Court of Human Rights decision hailed by campaigners as groundbreaking serves as a blueprint. This is not a one-off. This is something that likely we're going to see more and more and more governments accept. The impact of the decision is expected to be felt far beyond Europe's borders. In an unappealable ruling, the ECHR found that the Swiss government had violated human rights to respect the private and family life and failed to comply with its duties. Again, how can you quantify this stuff? You can't. They complied with their... What would be the... What's the metric that we can use to determine whether or not the Swiss government is complying with their duties regarding climate change? I mean, come on. This is just nonsense. The decision could compel the Swiss government to revise its climate policies, including upgrading the near-term emissions reductions targets. And so how does this apply to the price of oil? It's the supply side, guys. If we see this continue, which we likely will, there's going to be less and less and less dollars, money, going into finding oil. And if fewer dollars go into finding oil, that means the supply is going to continue to shrink. But the demand, whether or not these blue-haired 2,000 Swiss women like it or not, is going to continue to increase. Why? I'm living in it right here in Argentina as I look out my window. I'm living in it in Colombia. I've been there in Ecuador. All over the world, there's quite literally billions of people that are trying to go up the economic ladder who don't care about old ladies in Switzerland. They just care about their kids having a better life than they had. And unfortunately, it is what it is. This requires more energy. And what they can't fall back on is an energy source that is less dense. At no point in history has the human race gone from a less dense energy source. It's never happened. And if you think about how important energy is and how people want to pursue their own self-interest and people want to improve their lives, it makes total sense. So even if we do see demand start to go down because of these crazies in the West, we're going to see demand increase to a greater degree in markets like South America, Asia, and Africa. So you have this setup. It's just like what Jim Rogers talked about, hot commodities, in early 2000, the book he wrote, where we saw the price of things like lead skyrocket. The price of pretty much all commodities just went parabolic from the early 2000s to call it 2011, 2012. I think we're going to see the exact same thing happen here. These things go in cycles, these super cycles. And I think this one is going to be even more extreme because of these policies that are outlined in this article.
Hey guys, I want to invite each and every one of you to join me May 31st through June 2nd in Orlando for Rebel Capitalist Live. This is the annual conference I do, and this year it's going to be absolutely incredible. We're going to have some of your favorites there as speakers, guys like Jeff Snyder, Mike Green, Real Estate, Kenny McElroy. We're going to have Robert Barnes. They're talking about freedom and liberty. Even Rich Cooper is going to be there discussing red pill issues. This event is all about giving you the intel, the insider information you need to not only survive 2024, but thrive. The whole reason I created this event was to give you the tools you need to build the future you deserve for yourself and your family. This is an event you are not going to want to miss. So to get more information, go to rebelcapitalistlive.com. You can see a full list of speakers we've had in the past. You can see clips from past events. And most importantly, you can get your tickets. As we get closer to the event, the tickets go up in price. So you're going to want to get those ASAP at rebelcapitalistlive.com. And we will see you in Orlando, May 31st through June 2nd.
Let's get back to it here. This is not a quote from Veselina Newman, fundamental rights lead at environmental law from Client Earth. This is not just a win for these inspirational claimants. Oh, they're inspirational now. Okay. These gals that have plenty of money to buy the electric cars, forcing the electric cars on the poor and middle class. Basically, these gals that can afford an electric car are forcing the poor and middle class to spend more money on transportation and therefore decrease their standard of living just so they can feel good at the next bingo game. And that will only last for 6 months because then they'll take that energy and allocate it to something else because they can't stand not being the center of attention anymore. This is really, it's at the core of what's going on. Anyway, getting back to this here. This result from one of the world's highest courts sends a clear message. Governments must take real action on emissions to safeguard. How would you define real action? What is it? Are we going to let these kids? We got Greta right here. And look at these guys. I mean, I won't go into more of the psychology of what's going on here, but we'll save that for a separate video. But look, these kids obviously don't care about the poor and middle class, or they haven't taken the time to even think about it, right? They've been give them the benefit of the doubt. They've been brainwashed to believe that this is a massive problem. And I just want to ask these kids if they've gone back and studied things such as the origin story behind the World Economic Forum, the Club of Rome, maybe, or maybe studied Thomas Malthus himself, going back to the 1800s. And this climate extremism is nothing new. They're just the useful idiots, right? And even if you believe that climate change is real and it's this massive problem, great. That's fine. I want clean air just like anybody else. But what you have to do is the cost-benefit analysis and say that if we reduce fossil fuels, what benefit are we going to have? But what cost are we, not just we, but the poor and middle class, billions of these people in South America, Africa, Asia, what price are they going to have to pay for the rich people in the West to feel good? That's what this is all about. And unfortunately, these kids are influencing all the other kids that will influence government decisions to take more action just because these politicians want to buy votes. And therefore, how does that translate to the price of oil? You have less money, less capital going into exploration. You have less supply, while at the same time, demand goes up. Now, I know a lot of you write about now, and I could go on with this article. They just keep talking about how this is historic and this is going to have a ripple effect across a lot of governments in the world. And I think they're right. I think they're absolutely right. And trust me, other women that are in the same category as these Swiss women in the West are going to see what they did. And they're going to set up their own 2,000 people to try to do the exact same thing. So once again, they can be the center of attention. And I know a lot of you right about now are saying, okay, George, this could lead to $200 oil, but you're the one that says that if we do get to oil prices at $200, $300, whatever it is, it actually would be deflationary because they're having to rob Peter to pay Paul, assuming that we're not having M2 go up, or more specifically, loans and leases or bank credit, or that somehow the government isn't quite literally printing pieces of paper like they did right here in Argentina. Okay, but here's where I want to take the thought experiment to an extreme, because I haven't solidified my ideas on this hypothesis, but I think it's worth contemplating. Let me show you what I'm referring to. So local governments in the developing economies, the emerging markets, they understand how important energy is to their population and to increasing the standard of living. So much so, most of you don't know this, but diesel is actually subsidized in Colombia. So if you go to the gas station, let's just say that you'll pay $4 a gallon for gas, but you'll only pay like $2 a gallon for diesel. And they do this for the truckers to get goods back and forth. And, you know, supposedly this is much better for the poor and middle class. But what ends up happening is you build an economy that where this subsidy is ingrained into the way people operate, and it makes it almost impossible to take it away. And so you've got Petro here, who is as far left as you can possibly get. And he, even he, is keeping the diesel subsidies in place. So what I'm thinking about right now is how the supply side shrinks because of what we talked about in the first article. This increases the price to the point where it starts to create deflation. But then the governments in the emerging markets see that, oh, wait, we've got to somehow make energy continue to be accessible to the masses, even though it's trading at $200 a barrel. How do we do this? And so it won't create the deflation and they won't vote me out of office. Well, what we'll have to do is we'll have to subsidize it. And so I think you could see in the future, and again, I've got to think this through to be more clear and more concise, but I think you could see more and more of these governments in Asia, in South America, and in Africa subsidizing the cost. So as you see prices go up and up and up in areas in the West that can afford those higher and higher prices to a certain degree, you see more of these subsidies. And then I think we'd get the exact same thing in the West as well, where there would be this balancing act where you would have the government trying to force everyone into electric vehicles and increasing the costs for transportation there. But at the same time, they're not banning outright oil. Then the price of oil is going up because no one's investing in it. But then what they're doing is that either they're subsidizing it or they're giving you stimmy checks, just like they wanted to do in California and wanted to do in California. So you, the average voter, could afford the cost of whatever energy price goes to. And therefore, you could see this weird environment where you're having these deflationary impacts on the economy overall, while at the same time, you're allowing the price of oil to go, or commodities in general, but we're focusing on oil here, to go up and up and up and up and up and up, because those supply side dynamics are decreasing while demand is staying the same because it's being subsidized by the governments in the emerging markets, or it's effectively being subsidized by the West in the form of direct stimmy payments. And you say, George, well, that doesn't make sense. Why would the government give people money to buy gas while at the same time making it illegal for them to drive gas cars? Well, what that assumes is that these government policies makes any government policies make sense. And that is to assume that there's no government policies out there that are implemented that contradict one another. you'd be far more correct, or you'd be correct far a greater percentage of the time if you just assumed that every single government policy doesn't make sense and every single government policy contradicts some other government policy. That is par for the course. That is not the outlier. So that, in summary, is how I think you could see oil maybe over the next 10 years go to $1,000 a barrel. And that doesn't even talk about, and that's just in nominal terms. And we haven't even talked about the dynamics with inflation if they're creating more currency units going into a CBDC. We'll save that for a completely separate video. All right, guys, on that note, enjoy the rest of your afternoon. As always, make sure that you're standing for freedom, liberty, free market, capitalism. Definitely check out Rebel Capitalist Live at rebelcapitalistlive.com. We've got our list of speakers here. You're not going to want to miss this event. You can get your tickets again at rebelcapitalistlive.com. We'll see you in the next video.